It's time for What's Up with Deputy Opposition Leader Nicola Willis.
Morena, Nicola. How are you this morning?
Morena. Very well, thank you.
Good to chat with you this week. There's been some big announcements from the National Party, particularly around your social investment policy or model that you have been fronting as the Shadow Cabinet Minister for Finance. This has had a bit of a mixed response. Some are seeing it as a return to an old policy of Bill English's, but there's been a bit of criticism around one specific new introduction from your particular party, and that's the idea that philanthropists would be encouraged to donate to social investment funding for state schemes. Now, Max Rashbrook has argued that to determine whether or not someone receives a core social service is a wildly inappropriate privilege for the wealthy. Are you committed to this policy, or is this something that you're willing to reconsider?
Well, Max misunderstands the policy. That's not what we're proposing at all. What social investment is, on the one hand, it's about getting better results from the investment we do across government already to try and change people's lives, whether that's education programs, health programs, social development programs. Social investment is about using data and evidence to intervene earlier in people's lives to make a difference, to use evaluation, work out what's working, scale it up where it's working, and where things aren't delivering results to stop them. We've proposed that in government we would have a social investment fund. That fund would be for investing in innovative social programs that we think will make a difference to those who are most in need. Now, we've proposed that fund will be government funded. Every budget that National sets will include funding for the social investment fund. What we have said is, just as at the moment there are around $6 to $7 billion worth of community programs being run by community organisations, so would the Social Investment Fund seek to invest in grassroots operations doing a great job in their community. And what we would expect to see is, over time, if that were really successful, we would want more community groups working with it, and potentially even those prepared to contribute their funds. And as a recent example, I'd point you to the Wellington Children's Hospital. Now, that children's hospital was built and funded by Mark Donajcik, a philanthropist in Wellington. And I'd put to you, I didn't see the Health Minister or the Minister of Finance saying, "That's terrible. We don't want private capital going in."
Okay,
well, what we should be focused on is results.
That's well and good, but there is also perhaps an argument to be made that instead of waiting for these voluntary donations, which are arguably always going to happen, there are always going to be wealthy people with money who want to put it to social causes, why not just tax those highest income earners and those millionaires out there a little bit more? Why is that something your party's shying away from?
Well, we are absolutely not shying away from this fund being taxpayer funded. It will be taxpayer funded. We support wealthy people paying more tax. That has been our policy for some time, including a progressive tax system. But we are also resolutely focused on results. And what that means is, if things are working and if people want to fund them, to scale them up and do more of them in the community, we're not going to let ideology get in the way and have us saying no. You know, social investment is really about the fact that for successive governments, blue and red, we have had a lot of talk about changing the lives of the most vulnerable and those with the most complex needs. But the receivers of services from government with those needs often say that it's not actually delivering for them. We want to cut through that and use new and innovative projects to make a difference in their lives.
I want to talk a wee bit about what you were saying about the data-driven aspect of this. There's also been some reservations about perhaps relying too heavily on data, because we do know that there are things that are very difficult to put into statistics, material impacts on people's lives. Is that something that you are factoring into this policy? Is that something that you're aware of? Or is it very much going to be driven by numbers and statistics all and only?
Well, I think we owe it to everyone, those we are working to help, and other taxpayers, to assess objectively which programs are making a difference and which aren't. And data can help with that. And so we will be using data to help evaluate programs. I also acknowledge that we need to use other forms of evaluation that look at other effects that maybe the data doesn't show up straight away. But really what this is about being rigorous about assessing what's working and what's not. And can I give you an example of where that works really well, which is in government, National started a Healthy Homes Initiative to insulate the homes of children with rheumatic fever and to warm those homes up on the basis that we thought, our hypothesis was, those kids might end up more well. Well, we used the data, and what the data showed us was fewer hospitalizations. What the data showed us was those children were less likely to be truant from school, and the data showed us their parents took fewer benefits. And so on the basis of that data, we then scaled up the program to reach more families in need. So I don't think we should be afraid of data. Data can be a wonderful tool for showing us what's working so that we can invest more dollars in it.
Are there going to be other methods of also approaching this? Because we know from multiple social support groups that there are other ways to also gather important information about what is being used most acutely for people in their everyday lives. Is that going to be methods of information gathering as well?
I think it's going to be important that we use the ways that work to evaluate which programs are working. What we are very wary of doing is repeating what goes on at the moment, and again has gone on under successive governments, where non-government organisations who are working with the government are faced with what they call contract spaghetti. They get a contract for this over here, a contract for that over there. Every contract involves multiple forms and bureaucracy and signing off that they've done this many home visits and handed out this many sheets of paper. We want to cut through all of that and focus on the result. Is it changing the person's life in the way that is aspired to? Because if it is, let's cut through all of the other stuff and let you focus on that job.
Okay, well, let's just, before we move on to talk about Hamilton West, I do just want to touch again on the taxation thing. We're seeing in the UK at the moment the results of a very time of crisis that they're going through with their leadership there, and that was partly due to the way that the pound plummeted after Liz Truss's government announced the high tax relief situation that she was putting forward there. We've now got a new Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak. Has this caused conversation within the National Party in Aotearoa about how tax is perhaps being discussed by your party at the moment?
Well, the critical difference between what National proposes and what the UK has done is that the UK embarked on a massive program of unfunded tax reduction at the same time as embarking on a massive spend up into energy subsidies. The issue in the UK was the borrowing for both of those programs and the significant addition to an already very high national debt. National has consistently said that we will be economically responsible, and that means that we will still be charting a path back to balanced books and to debt reduction. We don't propose to throw economic orthodoxy out of the window and borrow extensively for tax cuts. We've said the way that our tax reduction program would be funded would be fair. It would be about stopping poor priority projects, cutting out wasteful bureaucracy, and driving more value from existing government spending. And we're confident a prudent government could achieve tax reduction while also hitting those economic goals.
All right, well, let's talk about the Hamilton West by-election. Both major parties, Labor and National, are going to be trying to play the underdog a little bit here. But are you not confident that National can take this? Surely this is a walk in the park for you guys now.
Well, Labor have a significant majority in Hamilton West, both several thousand votes at the candidate level, and they also won the party vote in Hamilton West by a significant margin. So it will be something for us to overturn to win that electorate, and we are obviously confident about running a great campaign, about putting forward an excellent candidate, and we're hopeful that the people of Hamilton West we'll see that a national representative will do well by them in Parliament.
Now, in the last year, we've spoken lots about diversity within the National Party, and you've spoken a lot about how you and Christopher Luxon want to bring more diversity into the National Party. Is the person who's going to be standing for Hamilton West, are you confident that they're going to bring diversity into National?
I'm confident that we have had a diverse range of people indicate their interest in being selected for the Hamilton West seat. We're very proud in the National Party that the way our candidates are selected is that delegates of the party, that is members of the party who live in that community, are given the responsibility of voting for and selecting their preferred candidate after a pretty rigorous process of interviews and speeches and questions. So ultimately, it's not me and Chris who choose the candidate, it's those members. But as I say, I'm really confident, based on a number of conversations, that they'll have a diverse group of people to choose from. And I know that National Party members share my view, which is, let's have a national party that represents New Zealand as it is today in all of its richness and diversity.
Yeah, well, we'll be interested to see who's selected for that one then. Very briefly before we let you go, Barbara Kuruga, the MP for Taranaki King Country, has resigned all of her portfolios in the last week, which includes agriculture. That's over a personal dispute with the Ministry of Primary Industries. Now, Luxon said that he didn't know about this, this conflict of interest, until a third party informed him of the conflict. Is there a problem with the National around effective briefing?
Look, I think in this case, what's happened is we were aware that Barbara Kuruga's son had been involved in an animal welfare complaint and prosecution. What we weren't aware of was that Barbara personally had continued to advocate for her son, and that advocacy had involved her in conflict with the Ministry for Primary Industries. Now, that's not something that Barbara chose to elevate to us, and when that did come to our attention, to Chris Luxon's attention, he acted very swiftly, and I think that that's the right thing, and that this was managed well, in that he showed decisive leadership.
Now, to a lot of people looking at this, this is potentially another skeleton coming out of a National Party member's closet. How are you going to reassure the public leading into the election next year that there aren't more of these skeletons waiting to be unearthed?
Well, I'd reassure the public that Chris and I are setting high standards for our expectations of members of Parliament, and we are consistently enforcing those standards. And I think we all know to expect that in human nature. Things go wrong, mistakes are made, nobody is perfect. What matters, I think, to New Zealanders is that people are accountable and they take responsibility, and certainly that's the culture that we're leading within the National Party.
Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Nicola Willis. It's been great to chat with you. We'll talk to you again in a few weeks. Take care.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Kia ora.
That was What's Up with Deputy Opposition Leader Nicola Willis.